Hello, this is Lafayette Faust, creator of the Nevermore Hollows podcast. Thank you for making the show a success. Please take a moment to subscribe, give 5 stars, comment, and share the show with your friends. It's the best way to help us grow and to be able to continue to provide quality horror content. Also, please support our new art director, Chris Madman Goins at Black Sheep Studios TN on Instagram. He has some amazing Nevermore Hollows art for sale, signed by the both of us, as well as many other original pieces I think you're gonna love. Now, for you horror hounds who like to have a good laugh, I invite you to check out my other podcast. It's called The Three Uncool Cats. In it, my two friends and I sit in a basement and discuss music, movies, and whatever else comes into our warped minds. I would really appreciate it if you would give it a listen. Now, with that out of the way, I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. Welcome back to Nevermore Hollows. I am thankful that you chose to visit this creepy little town and hear the stories of good people standing up to evil. The other day I had a conversation with a close friend, and during that conversation he said something that left a profound impact on me. He said that everyone knows that our pasts influence and shape who we are today, but that a great many of us don't realize how our futures influence our current selves. I get that our past traumas and joys have shaped who we are today. That makes sense to me. But the fact that my future, which I do not know, may have the power to shape who I am today was fascinating to me. He explained that if I want to someday be a famous painter, the idea of the future I am trying to create for myself will shape who I am today because it will force me to paint, to hone my techniques and skills. Okay, I get that. That makes sense. But then he took it one step further and made the idea even more profound. He said that if he saw a future for himself in which he was at war, then he would be compelled to become a man of war in the present. This friend was Ivan Ivanovich. For those of you who visit Nevermore Hollows on a regular basis, you know of him, though you know little about him. Fate brought Ivan to the Pink Flamingos trailer park. There, he soon realized that the downtrodden who lived there were under constant attack from evil spiritual forces, and that they needed a warrior to stand up for them. He saw his future, and he chose to let it shape him into the man that he is today. In tonight's story, we will get a few more clues as to who Ivan was, and we will get a deeper understanding of who he is. We will see that who he is now is shaped as much by his understanding of his future as the warrior for the people of the trailer park as it is by the warrior he was in his past. With this deadly little teaser gnawing away at your thoughts, I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. The lemon-yellow sun westered through the pale blue sky, casting golden rays of light through cottony clouds onto the countryside. A soothing late afternoon breeze played through the trees, and birds sang a multitude of melodies that wove together to create a magnificent madrigal. But the glory of a beautiful spring day could do nothing to brighten the pallor of the Pink Flamingo's trailer park. It had been built in the middle of the last century. The trailers were laid out in a neat grid on narrow lanes that were named with a nod to the space age. The park was inhabited by the materially poor and the morally degenerate. It was where people came to live when they were out of hope or who were running from the law. At night, the gaudy sign at the entrance lit up in pink and teal neon. Certain letters burned brighter, and if you read only those, the sign read, "In Flames Trailer Park." For those who cared to pay attention, it was clear that on some days there were 100 trailers, and on others there were 101, or maybe only 99. This was because some trailers popped into and out of existence at random times, especially those located at the back of the park, which jutted up against Dunwich Forest, which always seemed dark and ominous no matter how bright the day may be. Ivan Ivanovich was the live-in custodian. He was a handyman who could fix anything, whether it be leaky plumbing, broken air conditioners, or disposing of the occasional chupacabra that might try to eat one of Miss Mildred's beloved chihuahuas. Nobody seemed to know exactly how long he had worked at the park. If you were to ask any of the residents who had spent decades living in one of the rundown trailers, they would tell you that he had been there the day they moved in. He looked to be a fit 50, but must surely be older. He wore his graying hair in a military cut and carried himself with the quiet confidence that only comes from one who has survived the madness of battle. On most days, he rode around in the pink and white golf cart that belonged to the park, fixing whatever was broken and keeping an eye on the residents. He had long ago removed the cart's battery-powered engine and replaced it with a small gas engine. This helped him get around the park more efficiently, and it had also saved his life on more than one occasion when he had used it to outrun various supernatural creatures that had wandered into the park. It was late afternoon, and he rode down Apollo Lane toward the back of the park, out next to the edge of the forest. He turned onto Saturn Lane, where the oldest trailer sat. There was supposed to be 10 trailers on this lane, but today there was an 11th. The other trailers were old, with faded paint and filigrees of superficial rust, but otherwise in good repair. This 11th trailer was not in such acceptable shape. It had once been painted white with a red stripe running down the side. But now it was covered in black mildew. Its windows were boarded over, and the small lot was overgrown with knee-high weeds and dead grass. Seeing this dilapidated trailer, he knew he had to ensure that it was empty because sometimes when these trailers appeared, he could hear strange sounds coming from them. And occasionally, some strange creature would crawl out and wreak havoc. Just as he pulled to a stop, the front door swung open and two women stepped out into the yard. They were followed by a rather large skunk. "Damn," he thought, "this isn't good." He knew these two women, and they were bad news. One was a thin blonde with 1950s-style cat-eye glasses and a nervous disposition. Her name was Kitty. The other was her sister, Roxy. Roxy was also thin, though not as much so as Kitty. She had dark hair and walked as if she were pissed at the world. They constituted 2/3 of the Brousseau sisters, who lived in the pink and white trailer out toward the east end of the park. The third sister, Big Mama, was the de facto leader of the group. She tended to stay close to the trailer because, as her name implied, she was very large and walking was a strenuous chore. Of all the quirky and often evil characters who lived in the park, the Brousseau sisters were the ones who caused the most chaos. This is because the Brousseau sisters were illiterate, and they were also witches. They could barely speak English, yet they were always casting spells written in arcane languages, which often led to unexpected outcomes.
"What are you two up to?" he asked.
He sat in the cart, his pistol within reach on the seat beside him. Roxy glared at him.
"Well, that's none of your hot damn business, Ivan. We know our rights. We can do whatever the hell we want to do, and there ain't nothing you can do to stop us."
Roxy maneuvered herself in front of Kitty, who held an oversized mason jar. She was clearly trying to block Ivan from seeing what was inside. Kitty's eyes darted around nervously. She wrapped her arms around the jar, hugging it close to her body.
"We ain't bothering nobody. We were out picking some wolfsbane from the forest when this here trailer popped up. We just took a look inside and are now leaving."
Ivan was concerned as to why they were hiding the jar. He was also curious about the skunk, especially because it was so large.
"What's with the skunk?"
Kitty gave a timid smile.
"This here's Cupcake. He's my familiar."
Ivan wasn't sure why this surprised him. Something odd like this was par for the course with the Brousseau sisters. Ivan had done a lot of research on witches and knew that this was an odd choice for a familiar.
"Why not a cat or a bird?" he asked.
Kitty shrugged and glanced away, seemingly embarrassed.
"Well, see, Mr. Ivan, witches don't really pick their familiars. It just kind of happens. One day you ain't got one, the next one just walks up and chooses you. Cupcake here came up to me a few days ago and told me he was mine, and I just love him to death."
Ivan scowled, but knew it wouldn't offend Kitty because he always scowled. He kept a wary eye on the skunk.
"What's in the jar?"
Kitty squeezed the jar tighter to her body. Roxy took a step forward.
"Nothing you need to be worried about, old man."
"I'm not in the mood for this, Roxy. I just need to know if it's something paranormal so I can be prepared to clean up any mess it may cause when you try to use it."
Roxy narrowed her eyes. She considered for a moment.
"All hell. Go on and show the old bastard what we found in the trailer."
Kitty stepped forward and held out the jar so Ivan could get a good look. It was about the size of a jar that one would use to dispense sweet tea at a summertime picnic. It was filled with amber fluid. Suspended in that fluid was a demon's head.
Let's take a quick break.
Out of the woods can the moon...
Moon Carter is a family fictional podcast, and I mean for the family. Parents, do you find it really hard to make it through your children's podcasts?
Then listen to Moon Carter and join me, Splot, and the gang on our magical adventures. Click all the links below or get it from where you get your podcast from. But if you need to be told that, then I worry about you. Splot. It's like drink water from where water's from. What's that about?
Not helping. Moon Carter is a podcast. You like it?
It looked exactly like how Renaissance artists depicted demons. The skin was deep red. There was a shock of black hair that billowed out in the fluid. Two small black horns protruded from the forehead. A short beard hung from the chin.
The eyes were closed. The mouth hung open, revealing human teeth except for the canines, which were a bit larger and pointier than normal. At first, Ivan thought it was a fake. But then, it opened its eyes. They were completely black. It fixed them on him, and it smiled. "Shit," Ivan grunted. "I think you need to put it back before the trailer disappears. We don't know what it's capable of." "That sure as hell ain't gonna happen, old man," Roxy said. "You ain't getting this from us. We found it. It's ours. You ain't gonna take it. We're gonna take it to Big Mama, and then we're gonna make it do our bidding." "That's what worries me," Ivan said. "Things like this always end up badly with you girls. Give me the jar." Kitty was by nature shy and non-confrontational. But in a rare moment of defiant action, she glanced down at Cupcake and said, "Attack!" The skunk aggressively wobbled forward and stopped directly between Ivan and the sisters. It raised its tail threateningly. As had happened on so many occasions while living in this park, Ivan found it supremely surreal that he should be in such an odd situation. "Okay," he said, raising his hands. "Call off the damn skunk. I'll let you go, but I'm going to keep my eye on you. If you try anything stupid and you get people hurt again, I'm going to make you regret it. You understand?" Kitty's confidence withered, but Roxy squared her shoulders. "You can kiss my pretty witch ass, old man. I ain't afraid of you." Roxy stomped past. As Kitty stepped gingerly past the cart, the demon cut its eyes toward Ivan and winked. When the sisters were safely past Ivan, Cupcake lowered his tail and wobbled after them. He watched the sisters round the corner, followed by the skunk. He looked around at the beautiful day and knew that, at best, it was a gilded facade that would crumble once those witches began interacting with the demon in the jar. He glanced at the trailer and decided to take a risk that he'd be safe taking a quick peek inside. He grabbed his Glock and slid out of the cart. He walked up the steps and pushed the door open and took a single step inside. A short hall to his right led to the master bedroom. A longer hall to his left likely led to two additional smaller bedrooms. The room before him was a combination of living room and kitchen. It was empty except for a long table, draped in white, blood-stained cloth. It sat directly in the center of the room. On the walls were painted odd symbols and words in a language he did not recognize. As he stood, taking in the scene before him, he realized that he could see through the windows. It was as if the thick sheets of plywood that had been screwed over the windows from the outside had just disappeared when he stepped inside the trailer. And even more shocking was that the windows looked out into darkness. He glanced out the door behind him and saw the golden rays of late afternoon. But looking through the windows, it appeared that it was the dead of night. He stepped into the kitchen and looked out the window over the sink. He saw a shallow backyard, thick with weeds. Beyond that was a street that ran parallel to the trailer. He glanced to his right, down the street, and there were other trailers, all dark. He glanced to his left, up the street, more trailers, all dark. Across the street was a tree line to a forest. It was so dark that it was as if he looked into a void. Suddenly, a dozen bright dots began to glow an eerie green. He realized that these were eyes when some of them blinked. They hovered in a group that rose 10 feet high and 8 or so feet wide. He knew he should turn and run out of the trailer, but he was transfixed with the need to see what these things were. They began to move in his direction. The hair on his arms stood up. Icy goosebumps bubbled down his spine. What emerged from the black forest was not a dozen creatures, but a single creature. It was massive. Its body resembled a black widow with long, spindly legs, but was much larger, easily the size of a large truck, and it was covered in what appeared to be pale human skin. The bulbous body was also covered with those green glowing eyes. It skittered to the edge of the street, the eyes darting in different directions. Then they all turned and fixed themselves on the trailer. The creature shot across the road. Ivan flinched, realizing it was heading toward him. He turned and ran through the living room and out the front door into the bright afternoon sun, slamming the door shut behind him. He ran to his cart before looking back at the trailer. It sat there in its disrepair, but the day was bright and there were no spider creatures covered in human skin and glowing eyes. He wondered, and even feared the possibility that if the front door had not slammed shut behind him, that the creature would have been able to somehow come through into this realm. Either way, the demon in the jar needed to be put back into the trailer before it disappeared, or something crazier than the normal crazy would happen. He needed to get the demon from the sisters. While he figured out how best to do that and stay alive, he needed to keep people out of the trailer. He kept a toolbox in the back of the cart. From it, he retrieved a battery-powered drill, screws, and a latch, and a heavy-duty security lock. He quickly attached the latch to the trailer's door and secured it. He had only one recourse in dealing with the sisters, and he grimaced at the thought of having to use it. He needed to speak with Granny Dingo. She was a gnarled old witch that lived here in the park with her mangy dingo dog that she named Manson. More than once she had helped Ivan, but not out of any altruism. She helped because it got too loud. And Granny Dingo was powerful, possibly ancient, evil as they come, but craved quiet solitude. And her help always came with a price. "Crap," he said. "This is going to cost me." He slid into the cart and headed off toward Granny Dingo's trailer. He drove to her trailer, which was on Moonshot Lane. He parked in her driveway, and Granny Dingo was plucking various leaves from her overgrown herb garden. This is where she grew many of her own ingredients for her arcane spells. She wore a pink velour tracksuit with white stripes down the arms and a pair of white fuzzy slippers. She looked as ancient as a mummified pharaoh. She had deep wrinkles on her face, but her eyes seemed young and bright. She wore her gray hair in a bun that was held in place with a withered raven claw. At her side was her near-feral dingo, Manson. It was unclear if she had given the mangy beast that name, or if some of the trailer folk had given it the name and it had just stuck. Manson knew Ivan well enough to know that he was not a threat, but he cut his hate-filled eyes at him and gave a low growl anyway, just in case. Granny Dingo turned to face Ivan.
"If you hear... it ain't good."
Ivan shook his head.
"It's not."
She narrowed her eyes.
"The sisters?"
Ivan nodded. "Yes. Another trailer appeared, and I saw them coming out of it, and they were carrying a large jar with a demon's head inside. Granny Dingo's left eyebrow shot up. She said, I fear that they will use the damn thing to cause some more of their crazy, Ivan said. Granny Dingo nodded.
Yep, that is something they are good at. This demon head, was it alive?
Yes, Ivan said. It smiled at me and winked.
Any part of a demon can be used to cast some terrible dark magic, Granny Dingo said. The head is the worst part, other than their black hearts. Did it say anything?
No, Ivan said. Granny Dingo considered her next question. Then,
they is different kinds of demons. What did this one look like?
Ivan shrugged. To be honest, it looked like the classic demon from myth and pop culture. Granny Dingo gave a low groan.
Oh, dim kind ain't the worst as far as stealing souls and possessing folks. But that kind will cause the worst kind of chaos.
This was not what Ivan wanted to hear.
How so? What them sisters have got a hold of is a trickster demon. It will promise you all kinds of stuff, but when you make a deal with it, it's going to twist your words around and give you something you didn't want.
Ivan felt a growing knot in the pit of his stomach.
The Brousseau sisters are some of the dumbest people I've ever met.
We have to do something.
Yep, Granny Dingo said. Otherwise, I ain't going to get my peace tonight.
What do you suggest we do? Granny Dingo pursed her withered lips together as she thought through the problem.
This will take some considering, she said. They are sly, them demons. You go on ahead and see if you can convince them dimwit trailer witches to give that demon back to you. I'll be along shortly after I do a bit of thinking.
Ivan got back in the cart and headed across the park to the sisters' faded pink and white trailer. The sun was beginning its descent behind the towering trees of Dunwich Forest. They had maybe a half hour before twilight. He wanted to get this done before that happened. As he rode, he reflected on how he had ended up in Nevermore Hollows. Decades ago, he had been known by a different name in his homeland of Mother Russia, back when it was still the Soviet Union. He had been a national hero. But he had witnessed a paranormal event involving high-ranking government officials that he was never meant to see. So he'd gone on the run and was chased all over the world by one of the Soviet Union's most clandestine organizations, an organization called the Shadow Men, which were Russia's version of the Men in Black. But one violent night, nearly 30 years ago, at the foot of a Mayan pyramid deep in the dark jungle of South America, he'd met Lafayette Faust, a man who was also on the run from his own government for similar reasons. Lafayette convinced Ivan to come with him to Nevermore Hollows, confident that it would offer sanctuary. Not long after they arrived, they were surprised to discover the dark truth of the town. Neither of them believed in coincidences, so if two men who were in possession of deep paranormal truths found themselves in a town that was the nexus for the paranormal, then it must be their destinies to stay and fight. So they did. And they'd saved many innocent lives together until that fateful night when Lafayette lost his son. After that, Lafayette had gone to ground and was hiding away in a secret bunker, healing from physical and emotional wounds. Ivan knew Lafayette was a strong man,
but wounds like those he'd suffered took time to heal. He was pulled from his reflections when he rounded the corner and saw the three Brousseau sisters standing at the edge of their lot, looking at something lying in the lane. Kitty was a mess, crying and shaking. Big Mama stood beside her, leaning on her old wooden cane. As usual, she looked as if life had gotten the best of her. Roxy stood on Kitty's left, tense and angry as usual. Ivan saw what was causing Kitty's distress. Cupcake, the skunk, lay smashed in a bloody mess in the center of the lane. "Hank Varnell, that damned drunk, he done run over the skunk," Roxy said as Ivan pulled to a stop. "Cupcake was more than a skunk," Kitty whispered in a trembling voice. He was my familiar." Roxy threw up her hands in angry exasperation. "We can't have drunk assholes running over our familiars. Hank, he's going to be dead meat. I mean it, dead meat. I'm going to work a spell on his ass that will make him suffer. I'm going to give him boils and make him bleed from his eyes." Ivan stepped out of the cart. "No, we don't need to escalate the situation." He looked at Big Mama because she was the leader of the sisters. "Don't retaliate and cast any spells that will harm people. I'm sure it was an accident." Big Mama was dressed in a big flowing muumuu with yellow and orange flower print. She leaned her considerable weight on her cane, and Ivan wondered if it was strong enough to hold. She fixed her world-weary eyes on his. "Blood has been spilt, Ivan. We can't let it go unanswered. That mean old drunk aimed his piece of shit Dodge Ram right at poor Cupcake. He done run over him willfully. You can't understand how bad it is to lose a familiar like poor old Cupcake here, 'cause you ain't a witch. But retribution has got to be done." "Yeah," Roxy said, shaking a fist. "We're going to make Hank pay." Ivan hoped that Granny Dingo would be able to speak some sense into these witches. He glanced over his shoulder, hoping to see her floating down the lane, as she was wont to do instead of walking. But she was nowhere to be seen. He had to try to defuse the situation himself. Kitty turned and walked back across the shallow lot toward the trailer. Ivan feared she was going to get some ancient spell book or a voodoo doll to use against Hank. "Hang on, Kitty," he said. "Let's talk about this." She stopped at the stoop and glanced back at him. "Talking ain't going to bring poor Cupcake back to me." With that, she pushed through the door and into the trailer. Ivan turned to Big Mama. "You need to talk her down. Remember what happened last Halloween? The spell you women cast ended in death and destruction. If she tries to cast a spell when she's this upset, it's going to be worse." Big Mama shrugged. "It's going to be what it's going to be, Ivan. Just accept it." Kitty stepped out of the trailer and headed back to the street. She was carrying the jar with the demon's head inside. The demon's eyes were open, and it had a smirk on its face. As she walked, the amber fluid sloshed around inside the jar, but the demon's head floated directly in the center. Ivan had sworn to protect the people in the trailer park, but these damn witch sisters were some of the worst at making it difficult for him. "Kitty," he said, "whatever you're about to do with that, it will backfire. Don't do it." Kitty's face was smeared with tears. She turned her bleary eyes on Ivan. "You can't stop me, Mr. Ivan. It's already been done." Ivan had a sinking feeling in the pit of his stomach. "What's been done?" Kitty tried to stare defiantly at him, but her shy, nervous nature caused her to look away. "I done asked this here demon to bring my cupcake back to life.
He said he would, but that he needed to see the body. Ivan considered grabbing the jar and smashing it on the ground, but intuition told him that would be a bad idea. There was nothing he could do at the moment but prepare himself to clean up whatever paranormal mess this was about to cause. The demon focused its black eyes on Cupcake. Its smirk became a full-on grin. A thin, forked tongue flitted out between its teeth. Then it cast a sly glance at Ivan and began mouthing silent words. It finished its silent incantation. The skunk's tail flinched. An ear quivered. It opened only its left eye because its right one was missing. It raised its head and looked at Kitty and gave a sad little moan. It took a moment for the witch sisters to understand that the demon had tricked them, giving them the letter of what they asked for, but not the spirit, and that Cupcake was alive, but not healed. Kitty looked sick. Roxy cursed. Big Mama groaned, and Ivan grimaced. The sun dipped below the treetops, casting the park in a deep twilight. As they watched Cupcake try to push himself up, they heard a garbled growl come from the end of the lane. They looked and saw a bobcat limping toward them. Its torso was flattened and sported a deep imprint of tire tread, and its left hind leg was broken at a sharp angle. It had clearly been dead for some time because it was bloated and missing chunks of flesh. A cloud of flies swarmed around the poor creature. "What the hell done be going on here?" Big Mama said. Ivan thought he understood what was happening, but had one question to clarify. "What exactly did you ask this demon to do?" he said to Kitty. When he saw the confusion on her face, he said, "What were the exact words you used?" Kitty pulled her tortured gaze from Cupcake and looked at Ivan. "I asked it to bring my poor sweet roadkill back to life." "Damn it," Ivan said. He knew that she was an idiot, but the ambiguity in her request was another level of idiocy. Asking for her poor roadkill and not specifically for Cupcake to be brought back to life was too vague, allowing this demon to create chaos. "Did you run over that bobcat?"
Yeah,
Kitty said, scrunching up her face in confusion at the question.
It was last week. Why?
"This damn demon used your exact words and has brought back to life anything you've ever run over recently." Kitty's eyes shot wide.
"Oh, shit,"
she said. Just then, Don Melton turned the corner and strode toward them. He was a giant of a man, standing 6'7" and powerfully built. He'd gone missing 3 days ago, and now it was clear as to why. The right side of his head was caved in. His shirt was missing, and he had ghastly road rash on his arms and torso. A bloody rib poked through his skin, and he was covered in ants. He walked surprisingly fast toward them.
"You also ran over Don Melton?" Ivan asked.
Kitty looked sheepish. Roxy shot Ivan a withering stare.
"You don't got to answer that, Kitty. Ivan here can use it against you and call the sheriff."
Ivan recalled seeing Kitty pull into the park the other day in her sister's rusty Dodge Ram. He had noted that the front grill was smashed. He glanced over to the driveway where it was parked. The grill was no longer smashed. There were more than a few men who would have fixed it and hidden any evidence for a bottle of whiskey or a revenge spell. Cupcake had finally pushed himself up, but was a smashed and gnarled mess. He tried to walk, but fell over. Kitty started to sob.
You three get inside the trailer, Ivan said. I'll try to handle this.
I'll just work a spell and make all this go away, Roxy said.
No, Ivan responded. Don't do that. No more spells tonight. No more deals with this damn demon. Just get inside and let me handle this.
Dawn was moving more quickly now. So was the bobcat. As they crossed Miss Mildred's lot, her good-for-nothing son, Harley, stormed out of the trailer. He was short, 40-ish, and had an anger problem fueled by Budweiser.
Hey, big boy, he yelled at Don. Get your ugly ass off my lawn, and take that jacked-up cat with you.
Don turned and stomped toward Harley. It took a heartbeat for it to register through Harley's Budweiser buzz that something was off with Don and the bobcat. When it hit him that they were dead, he started backpedaling, hands held out, saying, No, no, no. He tripped over a tire that was hidden in the thick grass and fell onto his back. The bobcat limped over and pounced on him. It began chewing on his face. Harley grabbed at it, but the claws from its three good paws dug into his chest and throat. Blood seeped from those wounds. Don strode up, lifted his massive boot-covered foot, and smashed it down onto Don's head. Ivan and the sisters could hear the skull crunch under the impact. Don continued to stomp on Harley while the bobcat ripped his flesh with its teeth and claws. Ivan pushed the sisters toward their trailer. Go! Get inside! Then he rushed over to the golf cart and snatched his pistol. He also grabbed the Mossberg shotgun he kept under the seat. When Don was done stomping Harley's skull flat, he turned and strode toward the Brousseau sisters' trailer. Ivan glanced down at Cupcake, who continued to squirm in its attempt to get up. There was nothing he could do for the poor creature at the moment. He had to deal with Don and the bobcat first. He shot a look at the sisters. They were running up the stairs to their trailer. It looked like they would make it. People began looking out their windows at the scene that was unfolding. This was not the kind of community that banded together in times of crises, though. However, Bill Duggan strode out of his trailer carrying a crowbar. Bill was 30-ish and skinny. He wore horn-rimmed glasses, cut-off jeans, and a Jimmy Buffett t-shirt. His flip-flops made flapping noises as he ran toward Don. Ivan winced when Don turned his attention to Bill. This wasn't going to be good.
Get back in your trailer, Ivan said.
Bill raced forward, flip-flops slapping, and raised the crowbar high. But he tripped when his left flip-flop broke and he fell face-first at the edge of the lot. He rolled onto his back, holding his face as blood flowed between his fingers. His nose was bleeding, and he had broken a couple teeth. Don strode over, raised his foot, and slammed it down into Bill's stomach with a ferocity that shocked even Ivan. Blood spewed from Bill's mouth. He gurgled in agony. Don began stomping Bill, crushing his torso into a gooey mess. While this was happening, Miss Mildred opened her door to see what all the fuss was about. Her mouth fell open when she saw Harley lying in the grass, his head stomped flat. One of her six chihuahuas, one named Pretty Boy, boldly ran between her legs and charged the bobcat. The bobcat loped forward and snatched Pretty Boy in its jaws and began violently shaking its head back and forth. Pretty Boy let out a squeal. The bobcat dropped him on the ground and then swatted him, knocking the poor pooch 10 feet toward the lane. Pretty Boy's back was broken. He couldn't move. He lay at the edge of the lane, whining pitifully. The bobcat lurched over and began chewing on Pretty Boy.
What a damn mess, Ivan mumbled.
He raised his shotgun and fired at Don. Ivan had learned a long time ago not to use normal buckshot. Instead, he used shells with a single slug. This was sure to give maximum damage.
The slug tore through Don's right flank, blowing out a large chunk of his lower back, but missing his spine. He stopped stomping Bill, roared, and shot toward Ivan. Ivan raised a shotgun, but before he could fire, the bobcat ran over and leaped on him, knocking him to the ground. The shotgun fell from his hands and clattered into the middle of the lane. Ivan grabbed the bobcat's ears, breathing in the stink of death. One of the ears peeled away. He tossed it to the side and grabbed its neck. The bobcat tried to bite him but was unable due to Ivan's grip. He heard Don stomping toward him. He knew that he had to do something or he would be stomped to death as well. He felt the bobcat's claws sink into his chest and stomach. Mustering all his strength, he rolled to his right and flung the bobcat into the Brousseau sisters' yard. He pushed himself up, snatched his shotgun, pumped a slug into the bobcat's head. He turned toward Don, who was closing fast. He fired a slug into his chest. Don staggered back, roared, and stumbled forward, his black eyes full of fury. Ivan glanced at the bobcat, saw that it had pushed itself up, though it no longer had a head. He fired another round into its torso, directly in the middle of the tire track impression. Don ran up and swung a massive fist at Ivan's head. Ivan pivoted away, dropped the empty shotgun, grabbed his pistol, and fired a round point blank into the back of Don's head. Don fell to the ground on his hands and knees. He growled in rage and pushed himself up. The bobcat stumbled toward them and swiped blindly with its claws. Ivan knew that he was not going to win this battle. Only black magic could undo what black magic had created. He heard an angry bark behind him and turned to see Manson running up. The mangy dog pounced on the bobcat, grabbed one of its hind legs in his jaws and shook, flinging the bobcat back and forth. Granny Dingo floated down the lane a few yards behind Manson. Her feet hovered 6 inches above the ground. Ivan thought it looked incongruous with her pink velour tracksuit and white fuzzy slippers dangling from her wrinkled old feet, while having her hair held in place with a withered raven's claw. In her left hand she held a crystal ball. When she had floated to within 10 feet of Don, she spoke a word in a language that Ivan had never heard. It was guttural and angry. The crystal ball lit up, casting everything in a radius of 20 feet in a vivid violet glow. She spoke another word in that same language, and Ivan's ears popped as the air pressure around him intensified. A bright flash of crimson pulsed out of the crystal ball like a shock wave. It knocked Ivan off his feet and tossed him 10 feet into the neighboring yard. He hit the ground hard, jarring his teeth, but he rolled and pushed himself up into a crouch. Don lay lifeless in the middle of the lane. The bobcat hung limply in Manson's frothing jaws. Granny Dingo looked pissed, more so than usual. The Brousseau sisters stepped out of the trailer and into the overgrown yard. All three had sheepish looks on their faces when they saw Granny Dingo. Suddenly, Kitty realized that Cupcake was alive and well, no longer broken and missing an eye. Cupcake was whole. She ran over and snatched a skunk and hugged it close to her. Granny Dingo turned her furious gaze on Roxy and Big Mama.
"Bring me the jar."
Roxy started to say something, then thought better. She turned and ran back into the trailer. Granny Dingo floated over to Big Mama.
"I blame you for all this. You're the eldest, the leader of this godforsaken coven. It's your responsibility to control them. I regret the day I decided to teach you girls the old ways."
Big Mama leaned on her cane, a weary look on her face. She could say nothing because she knew Granny Dingo was correct. It was her responsibility to keep the sisters in line. She simply nodded and turned and headed back into the trailer. A moment later, Roxy came out, carrying the jar with the trickster demon's head. Granny Dingo slipped the crystal ball into her jacket pocket and took the jar. She grimaced at the demon. Ivan thought he saw fear on the demon's face. Darkness had finally fallen. Most of the tenants had brightly colored Christmas lights strung up on their trailers or around their lots. This was done in an attempt to bring color to an otherwise dreary existence in the trailer park. The lights blinked on, washing the scene in a colorful, twinkling glow. Granny Dingo glanced at Manson.
"Come," she said,
then turned and floated down the lane. Manson padded behind her, head low, eyes darting in search of danger. As they rounded the corner, Ivan turned to the mess before him. Don lay dead in the lane. The bobcat was a few feet away in the sister's yard. Roxy locked eyes with Ivan and flipped him the bird. Then she turned and walked back into the trailer.
"You girls are just going to let me clean up after you?" Ivan said to Kitty.
Kitty shrugged as Cupcake nuzzled her neck and chin.
"Well, ain't that the way you always do, Mr. Ivan?"
With that, she turned and carried Cupcake into the trailer and shut the door behind her, leaving Ivan standing in the twinkling glow of the Christmas lights next to the bodies of Don, Harley, Bill, and the Bobcat. He sighed. This wasn't the first time that the Brousseau sisters had gotten away with death and destruction caused by their unique brand of redneck magic. He looked around and saw people peeking out their windows at the carnage. He knew there'd be no help from any of them. So he did as he always did. He pulled his phone from his pocket and called Sheriff Mosley, one of the members of the small group who knew the paranormal truth of Nevermore Hollows. After relaying the facts to Mosley and ascertaining that he had secured the scene, he took a seat in the golf cart to wait. While he waited, he considered what had just occurred. Such terrible events were an almost daily occurrence here in the trailer park. The Brousseau sisters were evil and stupid, but they were by far not the worst who lived here. There were others who were so infected by wickedness that he could feel it radiating off them when in their presence. But here in Nevermore Hollows, he had found his true purpose in life, and that was to be the man who would stand against the evil people and paranormal creatures who threatened the good folks in this sad little trailer park. And that was a purpose he took very seriously.